Glad you guys are here. I've been here several times. We have different topics, and I'm learning about you guys as to what brings people out. There are 200 chairs here this morning. We're going to talk about alcohol. I was here one time before. We did sex, drugs, and alcohol, and I'd bring in extra chairs. I think earlier I did something on prayer, and we had like 50 folks. So, no, that's not true. Let me start by telling you what we're not going to do this morning. I'm not going to start like a lot of these talks, at least used to start, which is with statistics, maybe even gruesome photographs, things that would sort of bring out all kinds of bad news about teenagers and alcohol. And let me tell you two reasons we're not going to do that. Number one, we are in a church. And as many of you know, I'm big about talking to you as parents about fear. There is no place for Christians and fear. Now, I know, I live and breathe fear just like you do. But the number one command throughout Scripture is and has been, fear not. And so there's nothing worse than coming together as parents, forgetting about the presence of Christ and the fact that this is His body in this place, and just getting all worked up as if we got nothing to back ourselves up, and it's all about us. And not to mention the fact that nothing quite teaches teenagers that you don't really believe what you say you believe, like flipping out over everything that goes on in their life. So we will not do that because there's no place for fear in the church. But the other reason we're not going to do a bunch of statistics and scary photos or whatever is because it doesn't work. It's a really odd thing about alcohol and drugs, particularly alcohol, but with substances, that makes it such a constant part of teenagers' life. And it is weird thinking. There's more bizarre stuff that goes on because it just doesn't make sense. Anywhere from the kids that I had, there was some boys that one of their friends died in a car wreck. He was intoxicated. It was a single vehicle accident. And the next weekend, his friends got together to get drunk and remember their friend. That's just loony. I remember I had a kid several years ago whose parents had kind of, like a lot of parents, didn't know what to do about drinking, and so they kind of looked the other way, and their son did a lot of drinking. And finally, they kind of got some strategies together. I helped them get basically some courage to draw the line for a change. And this 17-year-old boy was in my office livid because he was grounded. And he said, "Dr. Wiggins, here's the really weird part. They grounded me for last weekend. I didn't even drink last weekend. I just had a couple of beers." I was like, doesn't that count? It's very weird when you talk to teenagers and their parents. And what's really strange is very often what's kind of weird is trying to get a sense of their thinking. We get really confused as parents. So we're going to talk really today a lot about trying to clarify your thinking about alcohol. And the first thing that you should know is that when you're talking about teenagers and drinking, the first issue is intoxication. That's really what it's about. The issue is not about what do we do about our teenager who wants to have a glass of wine with dinner. That is not the issue. That is not why we're here talking. Because teenagers do not drink a beer or a glass of wine or even a drink. They get drunk. Teenagers get drunk when they get together. They always have. There's even a weird thought that, well, you know, if it were legalized, it would be better. Well, I happen to be old enough, older than most of you in the room, that when I was 18, we could drink. That's right. Remember that? What's the legal drinking now? 21. Why was that move from 18 to 21? Actuarial tables. The data about 18 to 21-year-olds managing alcohol was terrible when it was legal. The really funny part is they raised the legal age of drinking from 18 to 21, even during the time period that 18 to 21-year-olds could vote. It was that powerful that it was overruled, basically telling a group of voters, of course, they don't vote, right? You're 18, 19, they don't, but it wasn't a huge risk. But the point is that the data was so strong, so powerful, that teenagers don't drink. They get drunk. And your kid that tells you, "Oh, but I don't," you're kidding yourself Two things. Number one, do you really think they're going to tell you? Do you really? Do you have any idea how much in my office parents will sit there and go, well, it's a little different in my house, Dr. Wilkins. She does drink occasionally, but she tells us, and we know she keeps it about one, and so we feel pretty good about that. And what you don't hear when you're not in my office, because I'm not going to tell you, unless it's seriously dangerous, is that she's like, okay, so I was so wasted. Tell me about vodka. Is that a, and the parents' confident knowledge just makes you look silly. Teenagers get drunk. Your teenager that tells you that he isn't is probably lying. And number two, even if he's telling the truth, that over and over again, I go there, but I don't drink. I don't get drunk. I have a beer, but I don't. There is such pressure when you're at a, most of you, I hope, don't know what it's like to go over and over again to a social event where everyone gets intoxicated. It's a very lonely thing. I call it when you're snorkeling and everybody else scuba dives. You're there, and suddenly everyone you're with isn't really that funny, but boy, they think they're funny. And they're not actually that friendly, but they act real friendly. And you're the one that can see all this and nobody else can. It's difficult to go week after week, month after month, and not be pressured to join in those that get, in fact, intoxicated. So the issue is intoxication. That's why, for example, marijuana is a big issue, certainly other drugs. Marijuana is being legalized in many states. You should know, and I have to remind teenagers this all the time, marijuana is not being considered for legalization under 21 in any state on any part of the planet. There's no discussion about alcohol or marijuana for anyone under 21. And the reason that marijuana is a difficult topic is because there's no such thing as marijuana use that doesn't have a little bit of intoxication. With marijuana, it's a managing of either lighter or heavier amounts of intoxication. No one has one hit of marijuana with dinner. There's no such thing. Or as someone said, actually you have a hit of dinner after you've had marijuana. So it's an intoxication issue. And that's why marijuana is also difficult. And really, if you're not sure about where you stand on this, since even if it is intoxication, I can tell you that you haven't looked at some of the SPECT scans, the brain scans, of brain-developing 18 to 21-year-olds who get intoxicated on any kind of a regular basis. Or another way to put it, who do a little bit of brain poisoning with just, you know, kind of some regularity. There was a recent study not that long ago, it was done in England. These were 17-year-olds, I think, that had what they considered heavy drinking. These were 17-year-olds that were intoxicated almost every weekend for 3 months. That's it, 3 months, almost every weekend. And their brain scans were clearly different and impaired from those that had not been drinking. We're not talking about suddenly becoming retarded, but we are talking about literally losing some IQ points. Because as you know, the brain does not finish developing, now we know, from till about 23 to 25 years old. That means that the damage that is being done to young adults is greater than being done to older adults. But again, when you get intoxicated, and we'll talk about it in a minute, and maybe we should now, is that that also is why it's important to think about your relationship to alcohol. It is, sometimes parents will say, well, you know, my teenager, you know, you get those little future lawyer teenagers that are like, we all drink, you know, as if that's even a closely relevant point. It's not. It's not. Because, number one, it's legal for you to drink. However, if you have a teenager that can say, well, you get drunk, okay, that's a problem. It is difficult for you to hold the line of alcohol if you also get intoxicated. By the way, it is really strange. If you do what I've done and talk to as many teenagers as I have for how long, the answer to the question, have you ever seen your parent drunk? They always remember. Kids that don't even know, my dad's, I think, in Houston. I don't even know. But have you ever seen him drunk? Yes, it was 18 months ago. They always remember when and where, even suspicion. There's something still, even with teenagers, a little bit jolting when you see your parents off balance. What's even worse, you see them off balance and they don't know they're off balance Because as you may know, when you're intoxicated, you do not fully know that you're... So we're not talking about when my parent fell down the stairs. We're talking about when she was really extra happy or he was super sleepy. And we knew, and they always know. So if you're trying to draw a line with alcohol and you have a relationship to intoxication, then yeah, that makes your words a lot less valid, harder. You still need to draw the line because you'll be playing the role of parent. There's occasionally the parent that's like, your teenager will say, well, you told me you got drunk in high school. Like, that's the big disqualifier. Oh, you got me. Okay, go on. I can't play the part of your parent now. That's absurd. You'll be playing the part of your parent. You'll be the one now that goes, yeah, and that's partly why I'll be making sure that I do what I can to keep you from making those same mistakes. The risks are still high, and the line you're drawing isn't about drinking. It's about intoxication, because teenagers don't drink. Teenagers get drunk. Your teenager may not drink or may only drink a little, but they are around teenagers that get drunk. That's just the only way to look at it. Intoxication is the issue. Is there any questions so far? And by the way, questions would help to make sure I know if there's anything relevant yet. Anything? Are you intimidated by my pointing? Okay. Yes, ma'am.
When they did change the age, did the actuarial change?
That's a great question. When they changed the age from 18 to 21, did that bring down the problems? Yes, I believe so. I'm quite sure it did. It's still a difficulty or an issue, but not as bad as it was when it was legal. From 18 to 21, I think the rates went way rates of alcohol intoxicated traffic accidents, so forth, went way down. Yes, ma'am.
Can you clarify? So, intoxication damages the brain or arrests the brain development?
Does intoxication damage the brain or arrest the brain development? Both. Intoxication is a moderate amount of poisoning. When you get too drunk, why do you throw up? So you won't die. It's a body, making sure to do what it can to try to reduce the alcohol amount, because it is an amount of poisoning. Now, it's a poison that will eventually be worked out. It's not going to be there forever, but the effects of it on a developing brain, because it poisons it, it arrests development and can cause some damage. Good question. Yes, ma'am. It's not reversible. Now, again, now we're getting toward fear things. I don't want to overstate the case that your teenager that does get intoxicated is not going to be ruined for life. But no, it does. You're talking about development that cannot be regained. It's lost because of episodes. Any kind of regular episodes of intoxication will reduce that, will poison, cause damage, and then slow down what would otherwise be development. But it doesn't, like I say, it doesn't mean that you'll have to feed them with a spoon and they can't talk anymore. But it does reduce potential for sure. Good questions. Now we're getting toward the fear thing, and I don't want to overdo that. But the point is that when you think about what the line you're drawing, the thing that you need to kind of consider is that the thing you're dealing with is intoxication. I had a guy, I was at a conference last weekend in Austin, and it was a bunch of parents, and one guy asked, since a whole lot of the other stuff that I teach is about teenagers learning to handle things themselves, be more responsible, he said, shouldn't we help teenagers to practice handling alcohol the same way? Isn't that? And it was a good question, because it's absolutely not something that we help them practice. You don't practice intoxication. You avoid intoxication. You do not get better at it. What's even worse is that you'll occasionally have young adults that, I've even had adults say this, that, well, I'm actually pretty good at driving while I've had several, because I have a lot of practice driving while intoxicated. And this person says it with a straight face. Like I'm pretty good at it because I did it. One kid even told me, because most of my practice driving, I was drunk. So I'm pretty good at it. That's absurd, but that's part of why we're talking about myths, because you'll hear really dumb stuff stated with straight face. Like, why are y'all so against my drinking? Because you get drunk. You people get drunk. Your friends get drunk. I would never get drunk. Well, good. Good for you, because you're not going to be there. You're not going to be drinking, because teenagers don't drink. They get intoxicated. Okay? So, and as I've mentioned, why is this hard to, why do I need to be kind of reminding you of some obvious stuff? Because a big problem with teenagers and drinking is compromised thinking. You get some of the looniest stuff that will seem so reasonable that you need to be careful. For example, when I look at a problem that a teenager is having with alcohol, I don't measure it primarily in the amount of beverage consumed. Number one, you never know how much beverage is consumed. Even in my office, when teenagers are being pretty honest, I believe they still underreport, especially when it comes to beer. It's not even a matter of trying to be honest. It's a matter of just kind of even remembering. But you'll hear amounts that are pretty outrageous, but that's not my biggest concern. What I want to listen for is where their thinking is compromised. Matt has already mentioned one today. I think he said this topic may be important today because yesterday was homecoming. What does high school homecoming have to do with alcohol? What connection is there? There should be zero. There's no such thing. It's homecoming. I'm pretty sure that they won't be having alcohol at your dance or at the game for teenagers. Why are we even talking about this? Because it's one of the things that teenagers will say, well, okay, you're right, I won't drink, but what about prom? What do you mean, what about prom? There are teenagers that actually can't imagine certain events without alcohol. They'll even look you in the eye and kind of like, you don't mean that, do you? We mean none of that. No. Well, and you'll begin to wonder, are we being too strict here? Maybe we should allow a little beer or alcohol on prom in high school. Illegal. Which other illegal activities are you going to kind of, well, we don't want to mess up their life if we do that. Listen, you should know that this doesn't stop with teenagers. I had a young adult, this guy was 24, drank a lot, got drunk a bunch. He was kind of worried about it, but he wasn't sure. And I said, well, you know, you couldn't stop drinking for 6 months if you tried. He goes, oh yeah, I could. I said, no, you can't. I'll bet you $100. You can't make till June. This was in December. Okay, you're on. By the way, what about Buffett? What? He had tickets to the Jimmy Buffett concert. So, well, you know what he was getting at. I mean, you can't go to Buffett without getting drunk. Is that true? Is that apparently they put an armband on you? You have to drink X amount to be allowed in? It's like certain events, even when you're an adult, you have that absurd thinking that this event, you know, you got to be drink regardless of your fear of whether I'm alcoholic or not. You got to drink, right? No, you don't. That's part of what is compromised thinking. And that's what I get more concerned about. Because you hear stuff coming out of teenagers' mouth that you can tell you've been around this a lot and you're beginning to fall into a lot of the myths that teenagers begin to think about. And so it's compromised thinking or denial, in the more technical term, that I get worried about, not just how much have they been drinking or how long. I even had a kid who I have reason to believe was telling me the truth, that he went for almost a year, went with his friends drank, he was a pretty strong guy, didn't drink, didn't want to, didn't think it was good for him, but you could already tell he had compromised thinking. He was saying stuff like, well, you know, they're responsible drinking, and, you know, at certain events and all this stuff. So that when he did finally slip over after a year of not, he went hard into it. He didn't start with just a little. He was way into it because his thinking was already being compromised, even during a long period where I'm pretty sure he wasn't actually drinking. It's the kind of thinking that you need to be careful about. And here's the funny part. That kind of denial is contagious. That's why parents are in here instead of teenagers. It is weird. And some of you know what I'm talking about, how you can be talking to an otherwise intelligent, somewhat mature teenager saying things to you that are outrageous, but after a long enough time, and they're so persistent and passionate that you begin to kind of, well, honey, he's kind of got a point there, and you'll lose track of reality. So we're here this morning to talk about some of the things that you may, if you haven't yet, it will come your way, that again, presented by perhaps otherwise successful teenagers, if you're not careful, you'll begin to think that this is actually not ridiculous thinking, and you maybe fall to the same myths that they do. That's why we're talking about this. That's why I didn't start with a bunch of graphs, because this sort of compromised thinking, these myths, are what actually influence and cause people to not make any sense in their behavior and not make sense as parents into what they allow and what they don't allow. So I picked three top ones, but these aren't the only one. This number one is my favorite. Myth number one, everyone at my school drinks. That's not true. Well, okay, I won't drink, but you know, I'll just be there. No. By the way, and I strongly recommend to you that the rule that you should make is you may not consume alcohol or any other drugs, and you may not be where it is being consumed by minors. That's just the law. Your kid is not supposed to be there anyway. They can all be charged, and it doesn't matter that, oh, they don't do that. See, what they do is they mostly make them pour it out. What difference does that make? That they don't equally enforce the law does not mean that your kid is not at risk of getting a ticket along with every other kid there, and, quote, I wasn't even drinking, officer, makes no sense. It makes no difference. So the rule can and should be, you may not drink alcohol, you may not be where it's consumed by minors, and some of your kids will tell you, well, then I have no social life. Like, that's going to really interfere because everyone at my school drinks. That's not even true. About a third of most high schools will have seniors that drink alcohol. Maybe about 10% of those are pretty regularly, consistently drinking. But here's the funny part. The kid that has been to some of these, some, will now be thrown into the category of, oh, he does. Well, he did, he doesn't. And the group that drinks regularly does not know the group that doesn't drink. My favorite is when I'll go, seriously, everyone at your high school, this is at Highland Park High School, everyone drinks? Oh, yeah. You don't know a single kid. I happen to know two, you know, from the high, and he's like, oh, well, yeah, there's a couple of, yeah. I'm like, what? They don't count. They're not kids. They kind of don't. They basically are those kids or whatever their explanation of what makes them either loser, inconsequential in some way or another. But that is not true. Everyone at any high school does not drink. And there's a large portion of kids that don't drink at all, and an even larger portion that have, on occasion, had a drink, but that does not make them regular alcohol users. If your teenager seriously is concerned that, Mom, you're wrecking my social life if I can't even go where it is, then your teenager is already in trouble. There's already a problem. Because, again, why? Teenagers don't drink. Teenagers get drunk. You're going to a party where there's going to be drunk teenagers. And even if you're responsible, guess what happens around you? Bad stuff happens at these parties. You hear the stories. Groups that are way into it actually live for the stories. The stories of the people that hooked up that they didn't even know each other before then. It was so creepy. Or the guy that got into a fight with his best friend. But or the kid that smacked into this dad's car, this other guy's car. It's bad stuff that happens. That's what happens. Oh, my favorite is the story of the party where we were just going to have some alcohol and a few friends over, right? We invited about 10 people. And how many came? Like 50 or 100. Why does that happen? Do you know why? It's easy. Because you're already having a party where you have to keep a secret. And if somebody finds out that you're having a party and you can't tell, basically you can't say, listen, you need to leave or I'm calling the cops. You're not invited here. You're going to call the cops? Okay, well, I'm not going to call the cops. You can't do anything about it. Once you're having a party that involves alcohol, the teenager has lost control of who's there and has even less control of who they're around and how they're going to handle it, even if your teenager has been responsible. So if your teenager's already in a position where you're wrecking my social life because everybody at my school drinks, that's a kind of compromised thinking already. And even you hope they're not telling the truth, because if they are telling the truth, your teenager's already in trouble. They're already hanging with that group that thinks they're the whole school and is pretty sure, they're not making this up, they're pretty sure everybody drinks. No, they don't. That's a myth spoken with such ferocity and desperate arguing that you'll think, no, it's not. Everyone at their school does not drink, and you can and need to have a social life that's not centered around alcohol. Myth number two is one of my faves. I'm a responsible drinker. It's okay. It's okay. We always have a designated driver. Okay, so you're a responsible, illegal, underage driver. Okay, I get that. I see how you're handling it. And some parents are like, see, that's good, right? Is that good? Well, let me see. Does the brain damage that occurs when you're intoxicated, is it less when you have a designated driver? No, it doesn't. Here's my favorite, though. Many of you know this. Teenage designated drivers have a tendency to drink. Yeah, they're not good at it. They're bad designated drivers. They don't stay sober. And like I say, it doesn't even matter. They've already planned on, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to a place that's illegal for us to be doing and be around this illegal substance for several hours and get harmfully intoxicated. But we're going to make careful plans to get home safely. That's a good plan? That's not a good plan. And not only that, but you should also know this. Their plan of designated driver is really bad. Their plan of designated driver is often, he's going to drive us to his house where I have my car, and my house is only 5 miles from there. How will you do that? Well, I'll drive that last. It's only 5 miles. Do you know how many accidents occur within the, 2 mile radius of your own house? It's all okay. Teenagers are terrible at this. There is no such thing as being a responsible teenage driver. It's illegal, it's dangerous, and they don't even really do it very well. That's a ridiculous kind of little covering that can sound really reasonable. That's, I think, what the guy in Austin last weekend was talking about when he said, shouldn't they practice handling drinking? What I think he meant was, shouldn't they practice being intoxicated, since everyone kind of does? No, they don't. And secondly, practice being kind of responsible with a designated driver. That's not what teenagers do. They don't handle the designated driver thing well, and you're giving the practice of doing something that is harmful. Questions so far? Have you heard any of these? Has it come yet? It's coming. And it'll come out of the smartest looking kid you can imagine. Like your kid that, she'll talk to you because it can seem so reasonable among that group. So this kind of compromised thinking, I'm a responsible drinker. Now, myth number three, some of you may have heard from parents. This is one of my big favorites. It's better to let them drink at home so that they'll be safe. At least I'll know where they are, and they can drink here. Now, you should know that it is not illegal for you as a parent to serve alcohol to your child. It is highly illegal for you to allow alcohol to be served at your home by anybody that's not your child. It's illegal if you are discovered letting your child get intoxicated. In other words, having a glass of wine with your family, you know, that's not what we're talking about. But I know many parents that actually believe that I'm doing some good thing by kind of letting them, meaning my kid and some other kids. Does anyone know offhand what's the charge you get if you provide alcohol for someone not your kid? Contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Yeah, that's the charge. It was charged a couple in Highland Park it's been a few years now. Remember the prom and the tents and did you read that? Hand each couple some beer and a tent. That mom was arrested. That was the cool mom. Okay? But it can seem so reasonable that I'm letting them do it in a safe environment. You know what happens? Because I talk to teenagers. That makes your house the first house on a pub crawl for the rest of the night. Oh, let's go to my place first. Do you seriously think that they're like, that's good. Y'all go on. I've had it in a safe place. I don't want to go where all those girls from that other school are at that empty house. I want to stay here where it's safe. That's not going to happen. It's actually one of the more dangerous of the myths because it's so incredibly ineffective and way overestimates your role as a parent and what you can actually accomplish as a parent. Which is what I want to talk about in a second. So those are the three big myths that I would be careful about. Everyone at my school drinks. No, they do not. Secondly, I'm a responsible drinker. No, they are not. And third, be careful if you even hear from a parent that will let you know, well, here's how we handle it. The real careful way of letting them do it in our house. That's really one of the more dangerous of all of them. Yes, ma'am. Oh, yeah, Uber. Yeah, right? Teenagers getting Uber rides home is, that's an interesting point. Yeah, that's actually a lot of kids, well, you know what, to be honest, it depends on the income of the kid's family. I got a lot of kids I see that they could not possibly afford Uber. And then there's some kids that they've got the app, they're already, they totally know how to do it. Uber is, I would only add, is one element that doesn't change the fact that now we don't have to rely on an irresponsible teenage driver. We can get Uber after we have poisoned our brain and been in a legal situation that is dangerous for us. So that's a big relief. Yeah, that happens a lot. Uber is being used more and more.
Well, and your children are very vulnerable if they use Uber. Whatever the Uber driver might choose to do to them.
It's true. Yeah, I kind of like Uber, but I'm not sure if I want my 16-year-old daughter to get an Uber driver driving them home. There's just too much vulnerability there. That's a very good point. Other questions? Again, here's the reason that stuff is that these myths go around is because they are so compelling. I know it can seem, now that we're here in a group, in the church, which, by the way, I want to mention again, you need each other. When you're doing this on your own, for example, when your teenager tells you, well, so-and-so's parents, they let him drink, that's almost always one of many parents that I don't like it, I don't really know what to do, and I'm kind of alone here, so they don't seem to do anything. They're not okay with it. I'll even ask a teen, you mean so-and-so's dad says, y'all go ahead and drink? Well, no, he didn't say that, but I mean, they know he does, and they don't do anything. I said, I'll bet you they don't know what to do. And so one of the things that you need to, that can make a huge difference is you don't want to be alone in this. And the second thing is you don't want to surround yourself with the fearful parents out there, the scared folks that don't know that there's a God, that don't really trust that this whole Jesus gig is going to actually make a difference in our lives, and they're just scared. What you need is the body of Christ, a church among people that are striving to serve their God through the parenting and know that He will take care of your kid. But it also knows that this is your chance to be a part of and fully parent your child, which is an opportunity, not a fearful task that I hope I check off and get it right. So you need each other, and you need to be able to talk to each other, because like I say, if it hasn't already, it'll creep in even here. Because this seems, and on a day like this with everybody around, it seems so easy to see the difference on a Sunday morning. But on a Friday night, a teenager that's passionately telling you these things, you can kind of lose track of what's really going on and what's reality. So what do you do, in fact, then, to really have impact on adolescents? What you do to change these things is not to sit around and argue over again, waiting for the moment when your teenager goes, oh, wait, that's a really good point. I had not thought about that. I say it every time I come here. I want you to call me when you get that. Somebody let me know. And I don't know, by the way, it doesn't count when I finish my speech and he just went, that doesn't count as I made a point, okay? That's you hoping you made a point. But I get to talk to them later and they're like, yeah, your dad said he really let you have it. What'd you think? She goes, when? Well, you know, Friday, when he told you the whole thing. Oh, yeah. Anyway, I mean, when they look like they're not listening, they really aren't listening, okay? My oldest, my boy, had, I still remember the face, I've mentioned it here before, where it was the perfect the facial expression that said, you know, and I know, that I am not listening to you, but you can't get me on this, see, because I'm staring. It was the blankest, flattest little face that you know, you'd think would have triggered me to stop my speech. I didn't, because I liked my speech. I thought it was good. It didn't help my son, but by golly, I get, you know, and you get that feeling like you're checking off something, okay? That's not helpful. And when you're dealing with substances, you actually have to be careful that sometimes teenagers actually score points on you. You, like I say, you can come away dizzy. You don't argue this stuff with teenagers. You can certainly state your position, but you're not, your intervention is not primarily that we had a big sit down and that really showed her that this is bad stuff. That's not going to happen. There's a compromise in thinking. So you have to think again about other tools. One of the biggest ones that many of you know I'm a big deal about. By the way, I'm running out of books. I have a few in the back if you want. The Feeding the Mouth That Bites You book. If you get confused, Lucy's holding it up. It's that one right there. If there's details we didn't talk about, it's all in there. So I promise. But the big thing, and many of you know this about me, the big thing that we need to be doing as American parents is helping our teenager to grow up at home. The problem that happens most of the time with close families, too often with conservative Christian families, is that you give your teenagers accidentally the message that says, in this house, you're never going to really grow up. You just need to get away. And that is not a good message for teenagers. They need to hear from their parents that we see that more and more you are getting old enough to handle stuff yourself. And so you systematically pull out of their life. It's all sort of, I have example steps of how to do that, but you can do it your way. But starting at 13 on, there needs to be more and more opportunities for you to give the message, listen, you already know what we think about that. Why don't you make that decision yourself? Like that PG-13 movie that we don't think is good, but you know what? You're too old. You're 26. It's time for you to make that decision. Or what? You know, some things that let them know it is time for you to make your own choice about your music. I could go on and on about choosing your music. Are you still on sort of formally out there as having said, we don't think certain music is good for you? Are you kidding yourself? Are you Amish? Does your teenager have an electronic device of some kind? Then you're kidding yourself. You're not actually succeeding in controlling what they listen to. And you're missing one of the best things, which is the power. We talk about what I'm talking about in the book. I call it the freedoms list. But it's specific things that you actually formally state you no longer answer to us about these things. It's time for you to make your own judgment about which friends you hang with, about what music you listen to, about whether you keep your room clean. I know. But yeah, you could do that. Things that you, because with that kind of list, the more that you let them know that we're behind your freedom in these areas that are reasonable at times, then it should open up communication, which too few of you have. The kind of communication where you can give advice. Listen, that's your friends. Sweetie, I'm not going to tell you at your age, at 15, you're too old for me to tell you who to hang with, but it seems like ever since those girls got into drill team and you're not, they just seem more, I don't know, and you do whatever you want, that's up to you, but I just wanted to let you know that. You can tell teenagers that. You know why your teenagers won't listen to you with that? Because most of the time they think you're a cop. They think you're about to swoop in and go, you know, I'm not going to let you hang with her. Now, if those girls from church call, you can go, but not, and they think you're going to try to make them. You'll be weak at trying to make them when they get older. But secondly, you're missing out on the chance to actually communicate. And communication is a huge advantage in dealing with teenagers. But along with the same thing where you give freedoms and you're communicating about that, then there is also the right spot for really a list of expectations and consequences. And alcohol and drugs absolutely goes on the expectations list. In other words, you may have a list of things that say, listen, I don't like Kanye, but if that's what you think and you can handle that before God, that's your call. And talk to them about it. But when it comes to alcohol, no, that's not really up to you. Here's the deal. We know that we can't make sure you don't do that. But here's the thing we can promise. If we have hard evidence, that doesn't mean you come home stumbling drunk. That means a good source, a parent who tells us that they saw you there, or a bottle cap in your car. There's no need for any beer, anything. Oh, my friend did that. That's a shame. Your friend got you in serious trouble because there's no need for that in any of their vehicles. If we have evidence, then yeah, there will be consequences for that. And you need to have realistic consequences that you'll pull the trigger on. Like you'll be grounded first time, 2 weeks minimum. Grounded, that is, no, you don't go anywhere, no one comes here, go to school, you come back, that's it, you'll be grounded. Anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. If there's a second time, you could do maybe one more time. But listen, if there's a third, I don't know. We'll find out what the counselor says after you're evaluated for maybe some kind of an addiction. If you can't keep, 2 points make a line. This is showing us you let things increase in consequences. Because here's the thing, if you're not being very clear in the message that we expect you not to do this, do you think you're going to be able to push against it all this tidal wave of otherwise pressure that can be out there. You need to be very firm, very confident. This is not a time for you and your spouse to not be on the same page. And that, by the way, is a marriage issue. It's not a parenting thing. Spouses don't figure out their differences in parenting with a book. They go to dinner. And you don't talk about, well, Dr. Wilkins said, you talk about what scares you, and I'll tell you what scares me, and let's find something we can both live with. You take care of your marriage. You take care of each other so that you both of you are on the same page. You can't afford to be alone in this. And lastly, as I've already mentioned, you need to be with all of these people. That's what everyone's here for. Why do you think we're all here? Because Jesus is here, and we're going to talk about alcohol, honestly, in the church. These are your people. So if you don't know each other, most of you do, but if you don't, then absolutely, Lucy knows, Matt knows, you need to find ways to be able to back each other up. Because I'm telling you, when you get out there, it can seem kind of scary, kind of alone. There's a kind of thinking that seems so natural, so reasonable, that's just loony. It's a kind of denial that if you're not careful, you'll fall into it too. Those are the kind of myths that come out. I had a kid just last week who has already been, his parents set a pretty good limit because he actually believes they will take his car if he smokes marijuana. He hadn't smoked now for 2 months. But he still, this was in the first session, he was like trying to make a point to his parents that, you know, it still bugs me that y'all, I'm not saying you should let me. What he meant was, I think you should just kind of look the other way because you're ruining my social life. Everyone he knew smoke marijuana together. Well, you know what intoxication is? It's false intimacy. It feels, you can bypass the whole thing of getting to know each other, showing actual love for each other, and go straight into this kind of dizzy feeling that feels a little bit like love. And it is not. And when you get in any kind of regular experience with it, again, teenagers do not drink, they get drunk together. If there's anything where you get used to it, then your whole social connection, your ability to relate, which is going down anyway, right? I mean, our kids don't know how to be friends like they used to. It's getting weaker. This only makes it far worse. And he was already actual, and I told him after his folks left, I said, dude, I don't think I'm going to be able to help you with the, listen, you all need to let me do the illegal thing so that I can be a friend with my friend. I don't know how are we going to win that argument. I'm not sure. He brought up Colorado. I just laughed. I'm like, dude, they're thinking of bringing the legal age of tobacco smoking up to 21 in Colorado. That doesn't get reported so much. The under 21 isn't being discussed anywhere regarding substances for underage kids. So it's not even worth talking about. And I would absolutely encourage you not to get into long discussions with them. You need to set consequences. But at the same time, don't let the fear cause you to kind of try to hold on to everything. You can't. If you hold on to things that you don't really have control over, you just look silly. But now I'm going off into all this stuff. Questions? We've got a few minutes. Yes, sir.
I have something that's kind of odd. My teenage daughter, senior, mentioned the other day that a mother accused all seniors of being vape heads. Is that something new?
If vaping?
Yeah. Well, I know what vaping is, but is there something intoxicating about it?
Yeah, there is. This was a question that some mother had accused all seniors, again, myth, of being vape heads, which might very well just mean e-cigarettes. But it is true that you can get some of the oil that has cannabis in it and can use it in an e-cigarette. My experience is I have not seen a whole bunch of that. I think it's a little tough to get the oil. The e-cigarette itself is getting very popular. And by the way, you should absolutely have lines about tobacco and e-cigarettes. Not the same as with alcohol and marijuana. Why? Because no one gets intoxicated and smashes their car from a cigarette. It's not good for them. Twinkies are not good for them. But it's not the same level. Be careful about drawing a kind of line that's just like, well, just all that stuff is bad. Well, you're just going to end up losing your power on your punch of stuff that's really important. So an e-cigarette, which again is vaping, is not good, and you absolutely should set some limits on that. But I would even draw a distinction between your intervention with that versus with alcohol or marijuana. Does that surprise you that I would say that? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So I wouldn't chalk that up being benign.
No, I wouldn't say it's benign. I've heard a lot more kids talking about it than the number of kids I've had that have actually done it. So it's not benign, but again, I think the presence of vaping doesn't necessarily mean marijuana, but it's definitely worth differentiating between the two. Those are not the same issue. The reason that e-cigarettes are seem to be more popular, they think it's okay for them. I think they think it's actually not bad for them, and more research showing it, it's not good. It doesn't have some of the things that cigarettes had, but everyone isn't quite sure what's all in that oil. It's going into your lungs. I mean, you know, I don't even like going out on a day that's real hazy. Well, why would you? So, but oh, I'll tell you why, and this goes back to the issue of independence. The number one reason that teenagers, you should know, that teenagers often list for drinking alcohol is to feel grown up. And if you give over freedom in a rational manner, letting them know that in our eyes you are growing up right here, you don't answer to us about this or that or whatever, it's very powerful. It's an anti-alcohol kind of message that you don't need to go consume a beverage to pretend like you're a grown-up. You'd be a grown-up here because your parents don't actually give you messages that, look, I'm not trying to tell you about how to handle this or what to do with it. That's now up to you. More and more stepwise freedom is very powerful against alcohol and other temptations as well. Plus, you can communicate a lot better. So you see how those two things work? It kind of seems opposite. That's why I want to be very careful that I don't come in here with a big, oh, alcohol's bad, all your teenagers are nuts, you better sort of slam things down. Too often when that happens, you just seem irrelevant and silly. You need to be the powerful one saying that we have peace here because, you know, we do have this God of ours, and we are in favor of your growing up. Other questions? Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Mexico or the Caribbean or somewhere where it's legal to drink because they're division 18. And I just can't do that. I just feel so uncomfortable. I don't know how you can act at home like it's not a thing to drink, but we'll go to Mexico right now and drink there.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, that's a great question. Maybe you know this, but there are some groups in this town that actually think it's a tradition, quote unquote, at the high school to let your seniors in high school, the spring break, go to Mexico. So, and again, as you know, that's not a go to Mexico and drink, and we're kind of okay with that. I'll be dead honest with you. There are many high schools that's not a tradition. They cannot afford to do that. But when you can, then occasionally a myth will arise here. That's a myth. It is not a tradition here. There are many, many parents that would never do that, but you'll hear about it, and you won't hear about all the parents that I happen to know that didn't go for that. Because you to try to draw the line that would say, well, we'll let you go to a place. Again, when a teenager does go to Mexico, and I've had several to do that, guess what? They don't drink. They get drunk. They get drunk in Mexico. They get practiced getting drunk. And practice getting intoxication is a prelude to major problems with alcohol. So, number one, it is not a tradition in the high school. There's not the school will not send you a flyer about this year's spring break. It is not. That is a myth. But there are many that will hear about it and feel, and many of you will in fact feel like that. You know, I don't want to mess up his friends, like you'll, and many parents will actually kind of buy in because they think that's what we do. No, we don't. And it depends on who we are, and that's where, if you look around this room, we could perhaps make a distinction about this year, because we don't need to do that, and does it weaken your stance in the future? Absolutely, it weakens your stance. It makes it seem like we're all okay with your dangerous and harmful behavior, but as long as you're in a country where it's not, that'll be fine. No, it's not fine. That's a great question. One more before we go? Good. Then why don't I pray for us? Because don't leave this room in fear. Matt, do we have any announcements before we go? Okay, Matt will have something to say afterward, but I want to pray for, and no kidding, let's try to leave this place with the awareness that, look, your kids You do the best that you can, and then you clock out with the recognition that we have a God that tells you, in Isaiah, can a nursing mother forget her own child? I would never forget you. See, I have carved you into the palms of my hand. You're not alone in this. And there's nothing to fear in terms of what if you blow it. There is only the advantage of seeing or not seeing the presence of Christ in your parenting, in what you're trying to do, in releasing realistically, letting go of things, while at the same time you're very firm about the things that we're not going to pretend is okay, and we will do what we can to keep you from that, so that fear doesn't enter into, and that's going to be my prayer for us. So if you'll pray with me. Father God, Lord Jesus, we have come here, and we are, there's a lot of us here, so there has to be at least two of us that are here in your name. And we welcome your spirit here. You have promised that where we are gathered in your name, you are here. So we pull a chair out for you, and we ask that you would teach us to look to you in all of these things. Help us to be not good Christian teachers to our teenagers, but examples, trainers. Let them see your presence in our life. And Lord, most of all, open our eyes that we might see your presence in their life. Thank you for this place, for this church, for Highland Park Methodist that lifts you up. Lord, help us to make you relevant in these margins that seem too scary, too, I don't even know what, to involve our faith. Just ask that you would dismiss such thoughts and give us the patience and the peace of your presence, especially in dealing with our teenagers and their relationship to alcohol, that we would draw them into a spirit that is deeper, more intoxicating, and more uplifting, and that is your Holy Spirit. Thank you, Father God. We ask all this in your Son Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks, Ken. Just a couple closing comments. One, every spring break, we have a handful of seniors that go with us to San Antonio for our spring break mission trip. You may think it's a million miles away that your kid would consider that, but every year we have a couple that come that surprise us, and they have an incredible time because we use them as leaders. And to have them make the decision to go on that trip, whether you make it for them or they make it for themselves, they're on that trip rather than in Turks and Caicos. It is a huge moment for our seniors to go on that trip. So I hope that you'll consider that. Just a couple things. One, I hope that you'll pick up one of Ken's books in the back. Excellent stuff. Really good stuff. I hope that you'll get one of those. Also, if you are interested in being in some kind of small group community, then we have a couple opportunities I want to tell you about. One is there's going to be a follow-up conversation to this meeting this morning, next Sunday at 9:30 in 391. Amy and Ken Berry will be leading that conversation. So next Sunday, 9:30 in 391 upstairs, it's just going to be a follow-up conversation about what do we take from this? What do we do with it? All of that. And then two, Laurie Luder, who's on our discipleship team, is at the back, at the table back there. If you want to get involved in a group, if you want to have a group of like-minded parents that are walking through this together, talk to her. She'll help you find that. And then finally, you've heard us say this a couple times from the pulpit recently, but one of the things that we really want to take and be intentional about as a church is being a church that is walking through issues of substance use and abuse with families, getting out in front of that with education like this, but then also walking through the eye of that storm with you if you find yourself in the middle of that also. We've been doing that in the past. We want to be even more intentional about that moving forward. Lisa Kroenke, who many of you know, will be leading our efforts in that. She's developing an outstanding plan right now that over the next year we're going to be rolling out bits and pieces of. So if you need support as a family right now, contact Lisa or contact me this week, and also know that that's coming. We're really glad that you are here this morning. This is a big issue in our community, and one that I'm glad that we as a church are going to be banding together to address. Thanks for being here. We'll see you guys on October 25th.